Miff Warhurst.
Weekdays on ABC Radio, online and on the ABC Listen app.
Edgar Degas is considered one of the most celebrated 19th century French impressionists. His work has helped shape the fine art landscape for years to come. Both as a painter and sculptor, Degas enjoyed capturing female dancers and played with unusual angles. Some of his most famous works are A Cotton Office in New Orleans, The Star, and Ballet Rehearsal on Stage. You can have a little Google for them now if you likewise as you listen to this. Now, Phil Grabsky has been making documentaries for 30 years, and his exhibition on screen series takes you not just to the galleries and the museums, but to fascinating behind the scenes as well. And his latest offering is Degas' Passion for Perfection. And Phil is in the studio with me now. G'day, buddy. How are you?
Very well, Tim. Very well.
Thank you so much for coming in. Now, tell me, why were you drawn to his art?
There's no question that the Impressionists are probably the world's favourite group of artists. But one of the things that fascinates me is that they're all so different. And their art is actually very different. Degas is, for some, one of, if not the greatest of them all. And yet, perhaps, he's not that well known. People know about the ballet dancers, as you mentioned, but there's so much more to him. So I thought it was time to have a look at, you know, who exactly he was, what exactly he did. And what prompted us was a fantastic exhibition that was at the Fitzwilliam Museum and Gallery in Cambridge. Perhaps not the best known gallery in Britain, but it's the gallery and museum of the university. So all those alumni that went through at the university and then went off to become explorers and politicians and whatever, had created their own collections and then on their deaths bequeathed them to the gallery, which has meant that it's the Fitzwilliam that has the most extensive collection of Degas' works in Britain. And when they put on an exhibition about his passion for perfection, that was the trigger for us to make a similar film.
When you say the Impressionists are everyone's favourite, why is that, do you think?
I think that's a really interesting question. I think part of it is that they are easy to read in the sense that when you see an Impressionist painting, most of the time, we, the audience, know immediately that it's a beautiful woman with her child walking through a field of poppies. It's somebody dancing next to a windmill. It's somebody by the river having a picnic. So you know what it is. That helps. And also the colours are very vivid. There's an immediate kind of visceral pleasure. Now, if you think back to the Renaissance and some of those religious paintings, history paintings or contemporary art, sometimes they're a bit more complicated. You've got to work a little bit harder, which is no bad thing. But for the audience, it's not quite as immediate. The thing about the Impressionists, though, and what we do with exhibition on screen, is that the more that you look at their paintings, the more you see the depth, the quality of storytelling, the quality, the actual craft is extraordinary. When you see these Degas paintings, for example, in close-up, you just see how complicated they are to do. I mean, I just heard on the news this Monet that sold for $110 million. Well, the figures are kind of ridiculous, I know, but the more you look at a Monet work, the more you realise that he was one of the most extraordinary artists of all time. And Degas stands alongside him.
When you talk about the sort of complexity of these paintings, can you see them in the films that you make?
Oh, yes, definitely. I mean, that's one of the great things about, you know, all these artists in some way benefit from the technological developments of the time. A really easy example is that the Impressionists, I mean, they benefited enormously from the fact that paint, for the first time ever, was in a tube, like toothpaste. Before that, you'd have to be in the studio mixing your pigments with oils or egg tempura or whatever it might be. Now they could go out. I've benefited as a filmmaker from technology to the fact that cinemas now, we distribute digitally. We deliver a hard drive to every cinema. We're in 63 countries, 100 cinemas in Australia. They get a hard drive, which means that the quality is the same as I see in the post-production suite. The quality of cinemas has improved enormously. So we can show you in high definition elements of paintings that you probably just wouldn't have noticed before. And the more you look at a Degas, I mean, you talked about the ballet school. So one of the paintings towards the end of the film, if you just imagine that he starts with a blank canvas and then look at that painting and think, why did he decide to put his easel there? How did he kind of construct the characters to create that perspective, the dynamism of the dancers? Even just drawing a dancer is particularly difficult, which is why he was drawn to it, because he found it so complicated, such a challenge. And the thing about Degas, which I think is inspirational to any creative person, is that every single day he woke up and his primary objective was to be a little bit better as an artist than he was the day before.
Are you saying that not everyone has done that as an artist in the past?
I think that sometimes when I meet young filmmakers or I do masterclasses or whatever and I talk to young filmmakers, I try to get across to them that it is a craft that you never stop learning. And whether you're a radio presenter, a writer, a filmmaker, whatever it is, part of that is studying the past. All of these artists would go to galleries and they would spend not minutes or hours, but days studying, copying the great masters of the past. They would go and talk to their colleagues. I mean, one of the great things about the Impressionists is that they all talked to each other. They exchanged ideas. They critiqued each other. They would travel by train to go and see what Cézanne was doing in a studio, what Renoir was doing in a studio. Not for fame and fortune. It wasn't about that. It was about how do we become better artists? How do we push art in new directions? Degas, actually, although he exhibited in all the Impressionist exhibitions, he didn't like the term. It wasn't his term. He considered himself an independent artist. But he recognized that they were becoming known as the Impressionists. But they're all very different. So if you love Renoir, you love Degas, you love Manet, you love Monet, you love then later Cézanne and Van Gogh, you'll appreciate that these are different, but all of them amongst the greatest of all time.
Talking to Phil Grabsky, who's got a series of films, exhibition on screen, what is the fascination for you about making films about art and artists?
I am endlessly fascinated by where do they come from. So the next film in this is our sixth season in Australia, so we begin with Degas, but in a couple of months there's a film called Young Picasso. And that film for me was, why him? Why this little boy from Malaga? Why does he become arguably the greatest artist of the 20th century? And we just look at his first 26 years.
I just want to know the answer now, please, Phil. Why is that?
Well,
or do we have to wait for the movie?
I could be mean and say you've got to wait for the movie. But essentially, it comes down to three cities, Malaga, where he's born. And what's very important there is that you always look at parents. In his case, his father was an artist and an art teacher. He goes to Barcelona almost by chance, but Barcelona was the place to be in Spain for young artists. And then what was enormously important was that he goes in 1900, takes him 2 days by train, third-class ticket to get to Paris, and that's where everyone wanted to be. And in fact, this season, when we were filming in Paris, we were filming for the Degas film because he was there. We were filming for the Picasso film because he was there. And then the last film of the season, Van Gogh in Japan, Van Gogh was there. So Paris is enormously important. But what unites all these artists, again, is their ferocious appetite for exploring what they could be as artists and just wanting to be the best that they could be. Now, sometimes that affected their personal relationships with people. I don't make any excuse for it, but it's an explanation why sometimes they could be a bit cantankerous, misogynist, or whatever it was. But part of that is because their primary focus was always, how do I be the best artist that I can be?
That doesn't always excuse...
Definitely, you know, not.
Less behaviour. I mean, why is this enduring fascination with these artists?
I think what makes great art is that it communicates to us about ourselves, about the human condition. Now, I'm currently making a major new film about Leonardo for next season. Those paintings are 500 years old. But actually, if you take the time to look, and that is something we try to encourage with Exhibition on Screen, which is just slow down for a moment and actually look at these paintings. Put your phone away. It's not about having a selfie in front of the Mona Lisa or Lady with Ermine. It's actually looking at them. And what is communicated is the human experience, human emotions. Now, I don't like to talk in art speak because I make these films for everybody. These are not for the cognoscenti. They're not for, you know, art teachers as such. They come, they enjoy them. It's for everybody. It's for my brother who would say, oh, I'm not interested in art. But when I get him to come and see a film, he always enjoys it. But it is true that these paintings are communicating to us about us. Now, it might be about a relationship between a mother and child. It might be about faith. Or it might just be, in terms of the Impressionists, it might just be that afternoon in a ballet school where these poor young, you know, it was a tough life. They were called little rats, these young girl ballet dancers. It was tough to be a ballet dancer at that time, and they were often from poor backgrounds. You've got the ballet master there who's kind of, you know, shouting the odds at them. And somehow Degas captured that. And one of the great things about the Impressionists is, and this partly because they're out of the studio now, they're looking at real people. End of the 19th century in Paris, there's a revolution going on in the sense that no longer is painting just addressing the counts and the dukes and showing, you know, all these people on their horses and in their fine chateau. Now it's looking at the poor nursery maid. It's looking at, you know, the train driver. It's much more about us ordinary people and capturing us. And again, one of my favorite Degas paintings is The Absinthe Drinker. Now, that's not a real person. It's actually a model. But he captures in that painting, you know, the desperation of somebody that's poor, who's losing themselves in absinthe, which was a pretty, you know, as you know, a pretty strong drink, in a bar. These are radically new kind of subject matters for artists, which I think resonate with us today.
Phil Grabsky is talking about his brand new film and his series of films that he does under the banner of Exhibition on Screen. And the new one is called Degas: Passion for Perfection. Do you think your films are more accessible than the galleries in some way?
We absolutely encourage people to go and look at art in whatever form. Public art, gallery art. You know, when I was a child, this all begins for me because when my mother and I walked into our nearby town, there was a tiny little gallery in a park which had glass cases full of bits of old dinosaur bone and bits of Roman pottery. And it just fueled my imagination about history, about art, about who these people were. And I've never lost that curiosity, that enthusiasm. So what our films do is we give you the opportunity to look at these artworks. You're going to hear the world's experts. I mean, I'm doing all the work for you. I'm going to talk to the world's expert. I'm going to show you how they put these exhibitions together. Not all of our films are based on exhibitions, I have to say, but this one is. I'm going to show you where Degas was born, where he lived, the streets that he walked. But ultimately, what I'd like you to do is to then go to your local gallery and just look at a Degas painting, or look at any painting. The thing I struggle with is when somebody says to me, "Oh, I'm not interested in art." It's like if somebody said to you, "Oh, I don't listen to the radio. It's not for me." It's like, no, you want to sit them down and say, "Hold on a minute." And as far as art is concerned, we're all interested in art, actually. We all make decisions about what pictures to put on our wall, how we dress. You know, maybe hundreds of millions of people are doing Instagram. And a lot of it is actually very good. Yeah. You know, people are making artistic decisions all the time. Don't be frightened of galleries. Certainly don't be frightened of these films. This is cinema. It's all about storytelling. Mm. You're not going to get lost in the terminology. You're going to enjoy it. And if it prompts you to pick up a pencil, pick up a crayon, pick up a brush, or go to a gallery, fantastic.
When you said at the top that Degas is not as famous as some of the other painters, what would you like people to take away from your film or know about him that you think is most important?
One of the things I do at the beginning of a film is I sit down and I write down what I think I know, but then I also talk to people and I say, "What do you know about Degas? Have you heard of Degas?" And pretty much people say, "Degas, yeah, he did the ballet dancers." So one of the things that I try to do is I try to give you the broader perspectives. Yes, he did the ballet dancers, and we're going to show you some of those and explain why. We're also going to show you his sculpture. Now, his sculpture of a small ballet dancer is quite extraordinary. We're going to show you that. We're going to show you some of his drawings too. We're going to show you the other subjects, horse racing. Tremendously difficult to draw a horse. Everyone struggled with that through the history of art, but he does horse racing and jockeys and so forth, and that's very complicated. As his character is concerned, it always fascinates me, you know, who were these people? Where do they come from? What was their motivation? Now, he's a complex character. Somebody said to me, "Oh, I don't know much about Degas, but he was very bad-tempered, wasn't he?" Well, you know, we're all much more complicated than that. And in the film, you'll hear correspondence where he's being very funny. You'll see black and white photographs where he's clearly having a great time with family and friends. You'll also hear about him being difficult and being opinionated, as in fact all the Impressionists were. And we don't shy away from the fact towards the end of the film that he gets involved in a major incident in France, which was called the Dreyfus Affair, which split France down the middle between those that believed that a Jewish French officer was innocent, which he was, and those that thought he was guilty. And he was put into a prison, an awful prison for years, even though the government and the military knew that he was innocent, ultimately. Well, Degas chose the wrong side. There's an anti-Semitism involved in that. We don't shy away from it. We offer that to you to say that's part of his character too. It's reprehensible, but there you are. And so by the end of the film, you have a much more rounded sense of who he was. And that will inform your understanding and appreciation of the paintings. Because it's my belief, actually, the more you know about an artist and the period and who else is painting and why they're painting and the technology and the economics and the history, the more you can understand and appreciate the paintings. I felt exactly the same when I made my films about composers, Mozart, Beethoven, Chopin, Haydn. Yes, you can listen to that music and you can appreciate it, even if you don't know anything about them, even if you've never heard the name. But actually, the more you know about the life of Mozart, the more you're going to appreciate his music. It's just the same for artists.
If you were to be making films in 100 years' time, you know, would we see that with globalization, would we see the same level of artists? Is there just too many artists now? Is it harder to be a global artist?
So if I was still making films when I was 121, you mean?
Yes.
The biggest challenge that a filmmaker would have is that I am very reliant on correspondence and letters. Mm. When I start a film, that's where I go first. So with Mozart, we're very fortunate. 850 letters have survived. That's where you get a real sense of who he is, not by watching Amadeus, which is 180 degrees incorrect, even though it's a great film. That's not Mozart. Monet, when I made a film about Monet 2 years ago, it's just based on 3,300 letters. We do not write letters anymore. All our texts, all our emails, I'm afraid that cloud would have dissipated, you know, and it'll all have gone. Mm. So that's going to be a real struggle for filmmakers. On the other hand, the technology is such now that in some ways I can sit here and say I don't think cinema needs to get any better. In the last 10 years, the quality of cinemas, my ability to distribute what used to be on film, which was expensive, cumbersome, it deteriorated over time. Now it's on a hard drive. It doesn't need to get any better. You go to your local cinema now and you'll see a quality of film, just the technical quality of film, which frankly is as good as it needs to be. We are so fortunate. It's why there's so much choice in cinemas now. There are twice as many films being made. You have my types of films which fit into a genre called event cinema. So you've got theatre, opera, ballet and exhibition on screen and a couple of other art films too. That's all relatively new. It's all in the last 10 years. So we're all extremely fortunate. Who can tell in 100 years' time what the situation will be? But the likelihood is a couple of things. One, there'll definitely still be cinema. And two, they will still be watching, hopefully mine, but making films about the greatest artists in history because their art is timeless. The reason somebody spends $110 million on a Monet painting is one, because they're very rich. But two, because there's something in that painting that is eternal. And there are plenty of, every day we turn, I was watching the news, your ABC news, you know, there's plenty of stories of destruction and death and all that, you know, what we as humans are capable of in a negative way. Great art is what we are capable of in a creative, positive way. And that's something we should celebrate.
It certainly should be celebrated. I think this is a fantastic thing that you do, bringing art to all of us and bringing great stories with it. Thanks so much for your time today, Phil. Really good to chat to you.
You're welcome. My pleasure.
Miff Warhurst.
Weekdays on ABC Radio, online and on the ABC Listen app.